Hi, this is Marco Liz.
Hey, we are Denzel Park.
Hi, this is Mark Knight from Torn Records, and you're checking out Act Like a DJ with LPR.
Hey guys, this is Stonebridge, and you're listening to Act Like a DJ with my boy LPR.
I should have never started this whole shit.
By the way, that's staying in. I get to edit this. You've had it now. That's a story within a story. Jesse Rose.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
Very well.
This is about a year in the making. I first met you at your gig last year. And then the way we we kind of figured this out is you were on a bit of a whistle-stop tour, so there was no time to do this, have a sit-down and even a chat, really. You were pretty much gone as soon as you'd played the gig.
Yeah.
But this time, you're here, and you're about to, as soon as you finish here, you're about to go and play your set. So
I am.
We are shoehorning this in one way or another. But why can't people just reply when you ask them if they want to do these types of things? We were just talking about this.
I mean, to be fair, like, I think, because I was having this conversation the other day, I think some people are probably genuinely shy and don't know how to reply. Me personally, if I don't want to do like an interview or something, I have like at least 100 excuses of why not. You know, I hurt my foot, you know, my rabbit's ill. Like, there's just so many excuses that you could have, and then you just don't look like a dick. So it's just way easier just to send a little reply, right?
Well, this is the reason why we kept in touch, because I'd send you the occasional tweet and you'd always reply. It's just, you know, it's as simple as
it's
that, isn't it?
It's not hard, is it?
No, it's just human beings being humans, I guess.
And you're my only fan, so I mean, it's like, you know, I see it when you come in, because it's like, oh, cool.
Oh, there you
the
go.
Only guy that tweets me.
So the important question then,
apart from my mum, of course.
The important question then. So, is this the first time you've been to Bali?
Yeah. I don't know. Is it? I think five times.
We were talking before about when you were in Australia and your press team sends you all the 30 phone calls a day, and every single time you pick the phone up, it is, hey, so is this the first time you've been in Australia?
Yeah.
So you've done a lot of press in your career, but this is, of course, the most glamorous and best interview that you've done by far, I'm imagining.
I mean, it's a podcast, right? So automatically, it's not even press, is it?
Well, you're a fan of podcasts, I believe.
I love podcasts. Yeah.
Which ones do you normally listen to?
I listen to a lot of the Tim Ferriss. I've probably about 100 of those.
Yeah.
A couple of Tony Robbins ones. I mean, I just think that you can just learn a lot from other people's experiences.
For sure.
And like, why make your life harder by trying to work it all out when you could, you know, listen to like Tim Ferriss interview Rick Rubin and him explain how he got from A to B, and he's done it really well without pretty much having to do a lot.
Well, you are a man with a lot of experience.
I'm old. I get it. Okay. I'm only 38.
Originally from London, currently torn between Barcelona and LA. Why those two in particular?
Sunshine.
Best reason.
Airport. Pretty much sunshine and airport is pretty much the reason.
You can't really argue with that. I have been to Barcelona. I've been to Barcelona once. I was there for one night. I got to watch 72 minutes of a Barcelona game before we had to dash off to the airport, which the plane was then delayed for about 5 hours.
Standard.
So we could have stayed anyway.
The irony of me moving to Barcelona was thinking that like that I would move there and then it would be like easy transfers to Ibiza through the summer and everything like that. Every single one of my flights to Ibiza last summer was delayed by 3 to 4 hours.
Perfect.
Like, it was just, I could have been in London and got there quicker. It was like...
That was a good decision.
It was like literally a really dumb decision, which I realised just last summer. And then by this point, it's like, well, I'm only DJing for another, 7 months now, so...
Oh, well, we'll get into that in a moment. But you're notorious for having no sleep or very little sleep. I have been.
Yeah.
Are you catching up on it a little bit now? Is that the plan?
Definitely in the last year, it's started to kick in. But in answer to that, like, you know, I haven't done drugs for like 10 years. And like, you know, I don't drink an excessive amount for the last few years. I'll have a big night when the needs must, but like that is not every night. But I think that if you're having a good time, you can just stay up for days. So like, you know, if I'm at a party and DJ's playing and it's amazing, and then we go to the next place and there's, but at the very point where the music's boring is when I have to go to bed. So if that carries on for 3 days, I'll be up for 3 days, no problem. Like,
well, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not a party animal as such, and I can't stay up for 3 days in a row, even if I wanted to. I just can't do it. So I've got tons of admiration for someone who
can. You probably weren't trained. Like, I was trained, like Judy, who books like Saturday nights at Fabric. We used to go when Fabric first opened, and I did like the warm-ups, like pretty much like every other week for the first sort of 5 years. And we would go from Saturday every week until Monday afternoon. So I was trained. So from there, I went to the residency at Panorama, and that did pretty much the same thing. You know, it's training.
Well, there you go.
Like everything. I mean, I'm sure you could do, you know, if you were running, you could beat me, in a 10-mile run.
You need to take me under your wing and teach me the ways of staying up for 3 days. I can't do it. I really can't. I struggle now. Like, the football match is over here. Like, if it's an 8 o'clock kickoff in England, right, it's 4 o'clock in the morning here.
Right.
And I'm finished. It's just not happening. I'll watch it the next day.
You can record it, right?
No, you can't record it. We're living in Bali. We're not living in these great cities like back in Liverpool with Sky Plus. No, it's no? not. It doesn't exist.
What
mate.
About if you got like a video camera and film the TV while you went to sleep?
I probably could do, but that's, I mean, sometimes what I'll try and do is set my alarm and wake up like 5 to 4.
Yeah,
and, you know, like let's say eight times out of 10 it'll work. But
that's what I used to do for Panorama. So like when I first started playing there, Panorama Bar in Berlin, my set times, I would choose a set time that was my night, but like the good set time would be like 4 till 7 a.m. And as the years that I was a resident there, like 6 years, it was getting later and later and later. So it was then 6 a.m, 8 a.m, 9 a.m, 12 noon, 3 p.m. By now, the prime time set is not even on Saturday. It's Sunday night. It's moved from Saturday
night
to Sunday night.
And how long was this process?
It's gone from 4 a.m. Saturday morning to about 9, 10 p.m. Sunday night. Imagine that. I mean, most clubs are not open for half that amount of time, but imagine that the prime time has changed by, you know, what is that, a good 16 hours.
But they're doing well. Are they still going?
Yeah, massive. Still massive. Yeah.
So there's a club in Bali, actually. I won't name the name, but most people who live here are going to know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's the only place in the world that I've ever come across where the bouncers help carry you in. So it doesn't get going until 7 or 8 in the morning. And
really?
It's lighter than this room, put it that way, when you come out of there.
Right.
But yeah, that's the only place where people help others get in rather than getting lashed
out. Wow. That sounds like I went to a stadium in Jakarta once, and that was... So people think that Berghain Panorama Bar is the craziest club in the world. Stadium is like going into a jungle. It's like the craziest place I've ever been. Like 5,000 people in like complete pitch darkness. Just the craziest business going on.
That can't be bad, can it, really?
And so that doesn't close either for like 3 days. I was in there for like a good 20 hours.
Oh, yeah.
After I played another gig.
And it's full of, it's all the police force are in there as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
They just get cracking on with everyone
exactly,
else.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But
juggling bits and bobs.
So people who are listening, they will have cottoned on by now that you've got one or two stories to tell. Your background then,
is that because I'm old?
It might be something to do with that you're old. It's your background. I know you've probably told this in various interviews, but for people who like the spoken variety, where did it come from? The music influence in your life, and how did that kind of, I know you were talking about the person before who molded you into these 3 day benders, and shouldn't say benders, but 3 day.
Yeah. I mean, if you're up for 3 days, it's a bender.
Okay.
He gets his benders mixed up.
Yeah, that's another story. Where did it all begin, and how have you got from there to where we are now?
Honestly, the best way to explain that answer is for people to listen to my Resident Advisor podcast, which literally goes 2 hours of me starting and how the whole thing happened and my family and West London and then like the move and everything. Like, it literally is like an hour conversation to tell you that. So RA Exchange, Jesse Rose, little plug for that.
Or not, or just come back and listen to more Act Like a DJ ones.
But carry on listening.
It's all right. We can edit that part out anyway, so that the listeners will never, ever hear anything to do with Resident Advisor.
I told you, you can always have an answer for everything, right?
I'm only joking, one. Resident Advisor. We love you, really.
I was very surprised that they asked me to do like a podcast, because I'd asked if I could do, in fact, it happened like this. They asked me when they first started if I'd do a mix, you know, the, what's the mix called? The RA mix, is it just called the RA mix? RA podcast.
RA podcast.
And I at the time was like, no, I wasn't really up for recording mixes. I was quite about people coming to the club to see me play. And so when sort of 7 years later, I was like, oh, I'd be up for doing a podcast now. They were like, no way, you're not doing a podcast. And then they asked me to do an exchange, which I thought was interesting. And an exchange is where you just talk about your life for way too long.
It's not as good as this, but I can see the appeal.
It's like a secondary this.
They're all going to be, aren't they?
Very un-Liverpudlian.
okay, then. So we won't talk about where you came from.
West London.
Can we talk a little about labels then? Because you've had your hand in quite a few.
I have.
Was the first one? My research tells me it's Front Room Recordings. Is that right?
Your research is right.
There we go.
Yay! Drum roll, please.
Smashed it. So that, hang on. Yeah. This is for the double prize here. Was it 2001?
I believe it must have been around that time.
I'm going
to
go with
that. I don't remember, so I'm going to have to agree with
you. That's it. It was
only Discogs can tell us the truth.
It was 2001 then.
Right.
So, Odyssey. How have you progressed then?
True story of how that label started?
I'd love you to tell the true story about
it. But it involves drugs and...
You can do it.
Yeah, no problem. All right, so I bought... this is so fucked up. I bought like a gram of coke. I was working in a bar at the time. I was, I don't know, 2018, whatever. In fact, how old was I? No, I was like older, 24. I don't know. Anyway... I bought a gram of coke off this like rich fella, and then when I told all my mates, hey, come to my house, I got this coke, like, it's amazing. They came over and it was really shitty, and it was like a quarter of a gram. So I called him up and I was like, this is really not cool, you've totally ripped me off. And he went, oh, I'm really sorry, let me come back. So he came back and he gave me 2 grams, and I was like, whoa, that, like, I've never heard of a drug dealer that went from half to two. So we became friends, and this guy was working in the city, and he basically was like, look, I'll be I'm into music, I'll be happy to fund a label. If you want to run it, I'll like put the money in. And and that's how the label got started. So like a dodgy deal was the, you know,
was the concession.
I'm sure there's a nicer way of telling that story than the graphic truth, but that is just a straight up.
I'm into it, mate. I'm into it.
That's the truth.
So that's one label. How many have you had your hand in?
So I did that, and then that started getting like pretty popular. We had like Solid Groove, Switch, who then went on to do like Major Lazer and produce MIA and Santi Gold and the world, basically. So that got kind of, it started getting like, it was supposed to be house and techno, and it started getting quite kind of anthemic in a still underground way, but maybe we were just starting to be played on Radio 1, and I wanted a more underground label, so I started Made to Play. And Made to Play was literally like no promo, nothing. We just release it, put it out, whatever. And then fucking Made to Play after 5 years became, or 10 years, whatever it was, became like really big with everyone, Reva Star and Oliver Dollar and all that, making really massive tunes. So I started Play It Down to be the underground label, which then again, like, people started making like these. And they were records that we didn't, you know, if you take like Oliver Dollar Doing Your Thing, like, that was a record that was, we pressed up, I think, 150 copies. And it was, and I said to him, look, if we sell 200 copies, we've done well, but I like the record, we'll play it as a warm-up record. End up being the biggest seller of Resident of Beatport for that whole year, and the number one charted record ever on Resident Advisor. And we did no promo, we literally just put it up. And so, I mean, it shows that I'm a shit A&R, but but yeah, then from Made to Play to Play It Down, then we did like A-Sided, which was kind of just like a way of taking the bigger records and putting them somewhere else. And at the same time, I think I did another little label called Made for the Night, which was to do with the night I was doing in Berlin.
Okay. So
I think that's it.
It could be.
I helped switch out with Dubsided, which was an old label.
There's another one that we... So you mentioned Switch, Oliver Dollar. Who has a combination of these labels, who have they helped launch? I know you've got a story about Reva Star as well. You signed his first record, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess my biggest accomplishment is finding artists and breaking artists. I mean, Oliver Dollar, you know, I met him. He just put one track out. I heard it. I asked to meet him. we met and he pretended that he could speak English.
I saw the interview about, I had a look this afternoon when you're talking to him, you're interviewing him and he's interviewing you.
Right, okay, literally like so, sat there for an hour like eating pizza and I was like, yeah, I really like your tunes and da da da, and he was just like, yeah, yeah. And after like an hour, I was like, you don't speak English, do you? And he was like, no. But so like, it's quite funny because he speaks like a Cockney kind of English because his English is learned
He's got it from you.
Yeah, just, you know, in the studio. So yeah, that was a really good, like, you know, I guess, like, you know, Sinden, Oliver Dollar, Reva Star, Roundtable Nights, Zombie Disco Squad, I don't know, Christian Nielsen.
Oliver Dollar was, he was your tour manager at first, is that right?
He wasn't my tour manager, but I brought him on tour to America to like let him just be a part of it, you know what I mean, maybe play some after parties. And this is a great story. He literally, like, he was trying to be a tour manager and we were in Denver, played the show, played the after party. Now Denver airport's like over an hour away from Denver. We get to the airport, I'm like, Ollie, where's my bag? And Ollie's like, oh, I left it on the street. And he just like left the bag. He left it on the street. So luckily, like, we managed.
Picked his own up, but left yours.
No, he picked his own up exactly and left mine. And I got the bag back like, I don't know, 7 days later. So I was wearing the same clothes for 7 days.
Good job we didn't have all your DJ gear.
I said to him, that's happened to me. That's a bad one. But I said to him, like, you better you better do really well in this career because you really are terrible at everything else. And like, it really, like, everything else. Like, you can't wake up.
Can't even speak English.
Yeah. Well, now he's good. Yeah,
he's doing
all
right
now.
He's good. So what's the story about you losing all your DJ?
Well, me and Junior Sanchez were going to meet in Ibiza 2 years ago.
Oh, saw that on Twitter?
To make some music. And we got out of the airport. I put my bags in. We went to the north of the islands, normally really chill. We had dinner. We came out, no problem. We drove to the villa. We opened the boot and everything was gone. And they'd literally followed us from the airport, opened the car from the side, very sneaky, taking everything out slowly and gone. Now, the problem was I was on tour for 9 months. And so I had my album gone, my backup drive's gone. I mean, it was a lesson. The positives now, 2 years later, maybe even over 2 years, is always back up your shit to a cloud.
So was all written off?
It was all gone. I lost the whole, like, I think I had half an album, maybe a bit more, whatever. All my music for my whole career is gone. All my DJ music, everything that had been backed up to digital was gone. So I lost the album. The album kind of was a bit too influenced maybe by like Jamie XX and it probably wasn't that great. And then, I mean, I just learned to back shit up, you know, like just yeah.
As
on a cloud,
as we speak
on a cloud.
Now, he's backing everything up now as we're talking. He's backing this conversation up now.
Yeah, exactly, all the time.
So did it kind of leave a bad taste in your mouth with regards to anything, or was it just?
Well, yeah, it left a bad taste in my mouth about Ibiza. You know, and like just being like, what's going on when we're in the north of the island, like a quiet, quiet place, and this is happening. When everything's stolen, like your laptop, your backup drives, you literally have to start from zero. I had to play a gig the night after at Amnesia, and I had to borrow, I think I played with like Todd Terry's stick and like Reva Star's stick. Like I had to flick through and just find the music on their sticks. And then I realized actually that like someone said the other day though, I said, oh, I lost all my music, but like I've got DJ Steek's stick, Todd Terry's stick, Kenny Dope's, Reavers, Oliver Dollars. They all gave me their sticks, right? And I thought, oh, if you were in any other type of music, like no one would give you their whole music collection, their edits and their special things. And so actually I realized just the other day, like that was really a special moment and how lucky I am through that dark thing happening that people would be that generous with their music, because that's a lot. That's really a lot.
I guess it's a blessing that you don't use a big Serato setup as well then, isn't it? You can just plug your USBs in, whoever's they are.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you can just
crack
on with the set, you know? you talked about a little bit about Reva and Oliver and so on.
Yeah.
When is, well, can you figure out a time when you consider your big break was?
Oh, if yeah, you could call that. No, I can remember that. I believe it was in 2004 or 2005, big break. So before that, I was resident around London, played a few shows around the UK, a bit of Europe. And then it was when I put out A-Sided on Dubsided. And that one track that I thought was going to ruin my career as a £150 DJ, over in the next month, I was DJing all over the world. Like the next month, it literally just went like that. And by the end of the year, I toured the world.
When did it first catch fire? Was it, can you remember a particular, like...
Soon as it was released.
Yeah.
Like literally it was released. It went into like, I don't know what it was, Fonica in London. And, you know, and it was just, everyone was playing that EP. It was just like Ricardo was playing tracks off the EP at the same time as, you know, I don't know, Derek Carter and Sneak and whatever. And it was, I thought it was going to ruin my career. And it was mental.
Because
it actually like totally fucked with the template of house music. It was like dropping into things that were out of time and just doing really weird shit. And it shouldn't work. And somehow it worked because everything had got a bit boring and looped up. And, you know, yeah.
Is that one of your favorite tracks or...
The track I did after that, which I thought was going to ruin my career again, You're All Over My Head, is one of my favourite tracks because I just love the fact that like it's like a folk record and people sing along to it. And it's all those records were ironic. We were taking the piss out of what we were doing. We were trying to make the best shit we could at the same time as taking the piss out of what we were doing. So when you watch German DJs dropping that record, you're like, oh, the irony. There's no irony with this, which makes it really ironic.
I love the laid-back nature of the whole thing. It's just, it's fantastic.
It was a great time. And in fact, having a crew at that time, it was me, Switch, Trevor Lovies, then Claude Von Schoke came along and whatever. But at that very time, it was the best because... We were battling each other, and Switch is always going to be the master of engineering. Like, he's light years beyond everyone else. But in terms of ideas, we're on a level. And when you lose that, you're on your own. You don't have the competition. I think you lose something. And I think my records are cool. Since then, there's good records and, you know, whatever. But I don't think the ingenuity has been there. And I don't think the kind of, they're just... It gained production, it gained like the nice sound of a record, but it lost the kind of out of timeness.
When you go into this, when the tour's finished and you go into this retirement phase, yeah. Is it all going to end?
Well, hopefully I'm not going to die because that would be really sad for me at least. It's just a kind of like, I went away and had like a couple of weeks off on a very small island. Again, very lucky that I can afford to go to a deserted island, and sort of just
should try and live in Bali, mate.
Yeah, a deserted island. Yeah, but still, yeah, exactly. I mean, Bali's been pretty inspirational, but and then turned off the phone and deleted all the apps that could possibly and didn't take my laptop and was remote. And spent 2 weeks and just thought, you know what, I've done the DJing thing. I've done everything that I wanted to achieve. Like, you know, at the beginning, you dreamed to play on Radio 1 and Ministry, because at that time, Ministry was the Fabric of those days. And then you play the Fabrics, and then you play Creamfields, and then you play Exit and Melt Festival and blah, you know what I mean? And suddenly you played all the festivals and you've done it. And it's like, and then you realize that you're doing the same thing. And I think that you should always be trying to, for me, or I always want to be doing some. I always want to be touching another goal, striving for something, learning something new. And I just thought, if I'm not going to be doing that, even though this is a great way to earn money and I love DJing, it's not acceptable to DJ. And then I thought at the same time, well, if I'm going to change, then I should also say, well, probably as the incarnation that I am now, Jesse Rose, that should also kind of end.
Well, it's interesting that you basically said exactly the same thing as Mark Knight said a few days ago. He said he can't sit still. He has to be able to be going for the next goal. He can't just rest on his laurels and be happy to be just DJing or just having done that album or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same. You're saying exactly the
That's
same thing.
That's very interesting. I guess, like, I mean, I mean, I'm not ridiculously successful, but if you judge success as living your dreams and traveling around the world, then I'm extremely successful. And I think if you're successful, you just, the buzz is having that dream and conquering it. And so once you've done it, why?
Yeah.
What's the point?
So what will you do? Have you had any thought at all? Like what?
That's the million-dollar question. I actually don't know. I actually don't know what I'm going to do. I spent as kind of, this topic will make sense in a minute, but like as an illustration, I spend like 1 or 2 days setting up my DJ sets, right? Like, you know, going through promos and whatever and doing track lists. I don't play them as a track list, but to have it so I know where things are. And then I turn up to the gig and I have no idea what I'm going to play. Like, I'll turn up to a festival of 20,000 people and it'll be the person's last record and I'll be like, fuck, I have no idea what I'm going to play, and I love it.
And you've always been that way?
I've always been that way. And I love the fact that this could either go totally wrong or you could just absolutely smash it with just like the passion of vibing off what's going on. And so I'm quite excited about not knowing what I'm going to do next and just, you know, and just seeing what happens. I mean, over the last few years, I've been asked to set up like management companies. I've been asked to produce a TV show. Like, I've just been really lucky.
Are you interested in any of those or not quite sure?
Yeah, I'm interested in anything that helps other people. Do you know what I mean? That's why I've loved doing the label so much, because it helps other people come through.
Is there anybody at the moment who we should be looking out for, who you think are going to push through to the next level, who you're helping out?
I think Weiss, he's been doing some great music, and it's just like, it's been around for a while, and he's deserved of going to that next level. You know, you see people, you like Claude Van Schoek, right? Obviously, he's a close friend of mine, but when you tell people, you know, how much he earns, or like, you know, in general, not exactly, but, you know, the kind of money he earns, or, you know, where he's DJing or whatever, you know, like, he's playing at Detroit Music, at Movement Festival in America, without them even hearing the album of his new project. And he's headlining the festival as Barclay Crenshaw, and they didn't hear the album before they booked him. Like, you're so happy for that success. It's just great to see people that deserve it get it.
I love the energy and the positivity, because not everyone's like that, believe me, and you know way more than I do. Yeah. But it's good to see. It's
well, I have a saying that, like, you know, when you're complaining about something, change it. And so when I complained about London, I moved to Berlin. When I started thinking I'm complaining about Berlin, I moved to LA, and I just don't want to be that dude that, you know, is just hanging around being like unimpressed with stuff. And we're so lucky.
So you don't know what you're going to do next, but have you got any thoughts on where you're going to live next? Because you're probably
I've been living for the last few years. I was living in LA for 6 years, and then I started living between LA and Barcelona. So I'm definitely going to move back to LA, and that's 60% because my girlfriend just loves LA. She's English, but she's lived there for years as well. And then also, just LA is just a really optimistic place. There's a thing in LA where everyone will try and help you because it benefits them.
Right.
And all right, you could look at that in two ways. Like, oh, you're doing this because you'll get something back. And there's nowhere else in the world where people help you. So just even though that's helping them in the long run, cool, you at least get the opportunity to do the thing in the beginning. So it's a good thing.
Again, it's just an amazing outlook.
It's a great outlook.
I meant to ask you before, and I got ahead of myself. You and Claude Van Schoek, how did that happen in the beginning?
We'd been doing our stuff on Dubsided, and before that we'd been on Classic, and somehow, I can't remember if I called him or he called me or what happened, but I heard like his first couple of records, which is, and probably I called him, because normally when I hear someone's records, I'm like, what is going on? And I think I heard Deep Throat, and I called him, and I was like, this is so cool, because I've got no records in this genre to play, and you're actually making records so that I can have a genre to play. And he was like, no, we're totally influenced by what you're doing. And then they invited me out to San Francisco, and then, you know, I met his family, and he's like one of the nicest people, you know, just an inspiration all round, like inspiration as a businessman, inspiration as a producer, and just as a dude, as just a good guy.
Just a good guy, yeah.
Can
we talk a little bit about albums? Because you've had a few of them
yes.
as well.
Yes, I don't know how many. Do you know how many?
I don't know how many. No.
I think could be four.
Could be, but there's one that's dropping
Yes, very soon.
When's very soon?
Sometime very soon.
Is it going to be before? When the tour finishes, is it going to drop after?
No,
the
it's going to drop like in the next 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how?
I just wanted to put it out without and not like promote it in advance. Just literally just drop it on a day.
And this is what do you do if you don't?
No, that's my first album.
That's why I've got it written down.
Exactly.
All right, mate.
There you go.
It's the most Scouse name for the for an album that I've ever heard, and I got them back to front.
Yeah.
Right, mate. Yeah, that's it. That's a bit of me. That.
I mean, there's the irony is like, it's like my last album. It's called All Right, Mate. Yeah, take that as you will. And the last track's called It's Not Over. But it is
just a touch of irony going on
irony just to keep, you know, life's too serious to be taken seriously.
It is
but I can tell you that Seven Davis Jr. is on the album a few times and he's just a really great dude to come onto the scene and
how did that happen? Is that you? Of course you.
Oh, again, I tweeted at him and he was like, I'm in LA.
And then he came over to the house.
And I was like, whoa, you were just coming out. And he just released this Friends track on Classic. And he just came over to the house in LA and we hung out. And we ended up, I sent him a track and he did the vocal. And it literally was, I had tears in my eyes when he sent it back. I've never had a record that was done that well without me working together with the person, or even working with the person. It was just next level, and there was nothing to change. And like, he wasn't singing about like handbags or like going out on a Saturday. Do you know what I mean? Like, getting a really good vocal is a job.
And you, of course, you're going to show us when this finishes, aren't you? You're going to put it on the system and
give us a teaser. If I had the key, I would. I'd love to play that.
We'll figure it out. We've got time, I think.
A lot of people on my first album asked me, what is the meaning behind the title, What Do You Do If You Don't? And it was just that when Switch asked me to do the album, I was like, oh, I don't know. And he was like, well, what do you do if you don't? And I said, okay, I'll do it because I take that title.
Sold.
Yeah, and that's why it
easy
happened.
As. So have you got any, I know we've had the incident in Ibiza, which was a horrible thing to happen. Have you had any real bad things happen to you while you're going to prepare for a gig, or you're in the middle of a gig or something like that? Any horror stories? Everyone loves a horror story.
I mean, I've got the shorter of the two stories, because one story would take literally like an hour to tell. But the
shorter, like, we're beating Resident Advisor any way tonight. Go on, roll
my gig tonight. I went to play in Moscow, and I played this gig, and it was very strange. It was like, you know, hot escorts. With all that.
There's that buzzword again.
We're not talking about Ford.
No. Could be Mercedes.
It's
that's
a big
another
Barley
story.
Joke that every person we meet is an escort. There was just like all these escorts with these old men. It was like pretty creepy, weird vibe. And like, I don't know how I got booked there. I was like 19 or something. And the next day they said, oh, on the way to the airport, do you want to go to the Red Square and have a look around? And I was like, okay. And I was like, is it okay to leave my records in the boot of your car? Like, is that safe? And they were like, yeah, no, it's no problem. Ironically thinking, I've now had two things stolen from a boot of a car. And then we went and looked around the Red Square. And when we got back, the boot was open and the record box was gone. And then in a very weird part of the story, the guy runs across the road to a blacked out Mercedes. These four guys that look like the men in black in suits get out. This argument's going on. And he runs over to me and he goes, look, they'll give you back the CDs and your headphones, but no, they'll give you back the vinyl, but they're going to take the CDs and the headphones. And I was like, yeah, like, cool. Like, I just really want to get out of here. Like, whatever. I don't even care. Like, I'm pretty freaked out that, you know. And so he gets me the records and we're driving towards the airport. And he goes, look, when you get to the airport, they might call the airport and say that you stole their records. There's a possibility. Imagine I'm like 19 or something. Do you know what I mean?
Sweating.
Like, yeah. Like, I'm like, you know, I don't know if I had a visa for it. It was all very crazy. And I get to the airport and they pull me over into a room and they start searching me. And I was like, what? Oh, this is like insane. And I go, well, why are you searching me? And they're like, oh, we're just checking that you haven't got like American dollars, like you're not taking money out. So I'm like, okay. So they like finish searching me and they let me like go to the flight. I nearly just catch the flight. Funnily, as the paranoid Jew that I am, I was paid in dollars and I'd stuck it with sellotape to the bottom of my foot, but they didn't check the bottom of my foot while they were doing the search. So
I won't ask what they did check then, if they're not, if they're not checking not, some sellotape on the bottom.
It wasn't the most fun. And I remember hugging the BA stewardess as I got onto the plane and being like, I'm never coming here again. I never went back to Moscow, which is probably a shame because...
That's a good enough reason not to, yeah, go, I guess, isn't it?
But I heard they're doing some good things. And yeah.
So halfway through that story, you did mention the word Mercedes. Now, there's quite a funny Mercedes story that we were talking about before. What's the deal with people just giving you cars?
But I don't know what the deal with people giving me stuff is. And again, like for someone that's never had a hit record, it's pretty weird because I have like a little sponsorship thing going with Nike. So I've been getting like... a fair amount of Nikes for the last 10 years or whatever. And then I have a thing with Zane Robe, this Australian clothing brand that also sorts me out of a ridiculous amount of clothes. And then Mercedes came into the picture and they basically gave me a car for every time I was in LA, which I nicked off of. I saw a model that was doing the same trick where she'd spoke to the PR company and they'd give her a new Mercedes. When they gave me the Mercedes, I was like, okay, what do I have to do? Do I have to take a picture? And they were like, no, please do not take a picture with the Mercedes.
Unless it's with the bag on you then.
And I was like really confused. Like, 1 minute, you gave me the Mercedes. I thought it was a whole promotion thing. Like, and then I realized that literally they were doing it so that people around me, you know, maybe some sort of famous-y people would use Mercedes and...
It paid off.
Happened.
It worked, didn't it?
It worked, yeah. They all started driving Mercedes.
These Mercedes people, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. They've got the clues.
And thank you.
So, in the last tour, where did it start? Where will it end? When will it end?
It started at BPM with Dubfire, which was a great start to this thing. We did two shows in this kind of festival, one on two different stages, both together. And where will it end? I don't know. I actually don't know because
it won't.
every time I think it will end definitely in November.
Okay.
But it was supposed to be like the end of October and then one thing came in for November. And so, but I think it should end. It should end in like a London, or it should end in Berlin, or it should end in Bristol, or it should end somewhere where that's related to me growing up, or
a little bit on your terms kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, nice. Even if it's like just in a pub or something, yeah. It should just end somewhere. You know, I might just go back and do. I mean, me and Fortet talked about DJing in like a tandoori restaurant in New York and just telling people the day before. So there's going to be a lot of fun things. I mean, I'm playing with all the gang, like Seth and Martinez Brothers and Dice and Eats and Roman Flugel night at Robert Johnson, and it's actually pretty touching, like that everyone wants to get involved in this final year.
So
no comment.
We'll move swiftly on because I know you're pressed for time.
Yeah, what time is it?
Oh, we're flying through this, don't worry. Resident Advisor, we're right on your heels here, boys. What, you better watch out. Okay, so...
You remind me of Lee. You've got exactly the same accent as Lee Mortimer, who is Friend Within now.
You know Friend Within?
Yeah. He's like, all right, chap.
I love it when people try and really impersonate. I love it. Keep going with it.
Because I hate it when people, like, in LA, people go, all right, mate. It's like,
So you like to help people. Where can people send their music to if they're looking to impress you then? Can they, more to the point?
I mean, pretty much at this point, not really. And to be honest, my vibe has always been this. It's like, I've never really accepted demos. And what I've done is I go and listen to a huge amount of music. And when someone releases on a tiny little label, I hear it and then I call them and I'm like, I'd like you to release on my label and I'll work with them from there. And I think in a way it's like...
I like that.
You've got to put in a bit of work, do you know? And I just realised just now, I think saying it, it's like for you to be in your bedroom and then want me to then build your career and take you to that, well, put in a bit of work first and I'll do it. And actually...
And you will find them out
sooner
or later.
Yeah, I mean, all of them. Like, you know, Roundtable Nights, I heard like demo someone else playing their first release, the demo of their first release on another label, and then... you know, I've literally gone out and just found these artists, and I think that you get off your ass and just do it and make something impressive, and people will hear it, and then your career will grow.
There you go, boys and girls. That's what you need to do. You need to crack on with that. Okay, and lastly then, where to after Bali? Where can people see you? Because this is going to go out in the next day or two. So
well,
where you
in
be?
The next, if you're, in fact, that's good, because I'm going to Australia for 3 weeks. So if you're anywhere in Australia, I will be there somewhere, wherever, everywhere.
And your social media handles, can you give them out so the good people can follow you and ask you?
Mr. Jesse Rose for Instagram and Twitter, and then Jesse Rose Official, and then Play It Down for the label and everything.
Beautiful. Mate, you're an absolute legend, and
thank you.
We'll go and enjoy your gig now.
Nice one.
Thank you very much for doing this. I know you're pushed for time.
My pleasure.
Take it easy. Bye. So there you have it, folks. That was Act Like a DJ. Hope you enjoyed the show. Check out Act Like a DJ on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And make sure you subscribe if you liked the show. See you on the next one.